Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Metzia Daf Tzadi Hey. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the Shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins four lines from the top of Daf Tzadi Hey. You will notice, as you look at the Gemara text, a number of different markings, geometric shapes, etc. On the side of the Gemara, we note the crown shape with a number 3. We started this marking scheme, this series, in our previous shiur, the Daf Tzadi Dalid Dafyomi recording. We have a continuation here of the series of questions concerning matters related to the Shomrim. The volcano shape that you see, that's new, and we've indicated in our Nosei / Mivne heading, our structural, on our topic heading, structural note combined here, is Shlavim Bechipus Mokur. These are stages in finding a source, the Shoyel Chayav Al Geneva Vaveda, that the borrower, one of the four different Baileys that we have been discussing in our recent Shiurim, he, the borrower, is obligated to compensate for theft or loss of the item that he borrowed. Now, the phenomenon or obligation of compensation for theft or loss is something that when you open up the Chumash, you will not find that in the Parsha dealing with Shoel. Now, before we go any further, let me emphasize, like we did in our previous year, that for full appreciation of what we'll be discussing in today's year, you must go over the psukim in Shmos Perichov Beis, psukim Vav through Yud Dalet. These psukim represent three sections. They're three successive sections, but they're separate. The first section, psukim Vav through Ches, deal with the Shomer Chinam. Psukim Tes through Yud Beis deal with the Shomer Sochar. The Shomer Chinam is the unpaid, the one who is watching, is guarding gratis. The Shomer Socher, a paid Bailey. And Psukim Yugimel Yudala deal with the Shoel. So when you look at the Chumash in that section, as we have recommended, you will not find the issue of theft or loss as a point of obligation for the borrower. Hence the Gemara's question. Now, we turn to the text, four lines from the top, Geneva of Aveda B'Shoel, Geneva, theft, Aveda, loss, with regard to the borrower, Minolon. From where do we know that? The crown shape, as we mentioned before, is simply a continuation of the Minolon questions, seeking a source for various points of law with regard to the Shomrim. So where do we know Geneva and Aveda from? V'chi tema, you might suggest Nelif Mishvura Omesa. Learn it from the fact that within Shoel, it says that he is obligated for breakage or death of that which he borrowed. And just like he's obligated for that, he's obligated for Geneva and Aveda. No, but you can't say that. We reject that line of reasoning. Malishvur Mesop Delo Efsher Lemitrach Vasuye. In the case of breakage or death, there isn't any possibility of recovery. Lemitrach means to trouble himself, Vasuye, and to bring it back. Therefore, because of this element of finality, the shoel, the borrower, is obligated to compensate. Should you say the same thing, Toimar, Begeneva Vaveda, Diefshel, and Mitrach Vasuye, should you hold the shoel obligated to compensate for Geneva Neveda, where there is a possibility of recovering. So maybe the rule would be that in the case of Geneva Neveda, the Shoel simply informs the owner, and the owner shall seek out his item and not hold the borrower responsible. So how do you know that the borrower must compensate for Geneva Neveda? Elo ki ha desanya. Rather, in accordance with that which we see in the following Tanaic source. The Pasuk says in Pasuk Yud Gimel, V'nishbar omes. That's with regard to the borrower. If the item breaks or dies, the borrower must compensate. Ein li elo shvur omesa. From that I see only breakage and death. Geneva v'edo minayim. This is exactly the topic we are seeking out. From where do we know Geneva and Aveda, the Shoel must compensate? Amris, we answer. Kal v'chomer, apply Kal v'chomer logic. As follows, Uma shomer sochor shepoter mishvura umesa. Chayov b'Geneva v'Aveda, mind you, the shomer sochor, who has elements of leniency relative to the Shoel, to the borrower, he is exempt from ones like breakage and death, and yet he, the Shomer Sochar, is obligated to compensate for Geneva Vaveda, so that you see that within a realm of leniency, there remains an obligation to compensate for Geneva Vaveda. Shoel Shechayov Bishvuru Mesa. Shoel represents a more stringent realm. He is obligated to compensate for breakage or death. Eino Din Shechayov B'Geneva Vaveda. All the more so, he, the Shoel, shall be obligated to compensate in the case of Geneva or Aveda. Vezehu Kal V'Chomer Shein Olav Tshuva. And this is an example of Kal V'Chomer logic that has no refutation. It has no undoing. This last statement is not commonly found in sources where you see Kal V'Chomer logic applied. This announcement that this is a solid Kal V'Chomer. The Gemara continues, "My ain olav tshuva." By saying it has no response, you're almost baiting the learner to say, "Well, what might you have asked?" And in fact, that's what the Rashi explains as to what was the thinking that you might try to undo this Kal V'Chomer. So here the Gemara presents what you might have thought. V'chitemo ika lemifrach. You might have thought, well, there still is an undoing. Ma l'shomer sochar. How can you derive shoel from shomer sochar? In fact, shomer sochar has an element of greater stringency. Shekein mishalim teshulme kefel, but toyein tainas listim mezuyon. If a paid bailee would have claimed that the item was stolen from him through an armed robber, that claim, if it were true, would actually exempt the Shomer Sochar from compensation, even though he has to pay for theft or loss. But when it comes to armed robbery, that's a form of ones. If he would make that claim, it would turn out that he's lying, that in fact he, the Shomer Sochar, still has it, he would have to pay double. Because listim mezuyon, armed robbery, is a form of gneva. That even though a shomer sochar in general doesn't exempt himself through the claim of theft, but armed theft, he would have been able to exempt himself had he been telling the truth. But here, by swearing and lying, by swearing to the effect that it was stolen from him through an armed threat, and it turns out he himself made off with it, he has to pay double. That phenomenon we don't find by the Shoel. So we see this point would seem to make the Shomer Sochar more stringent than the Shoel. And if that's the case, I can't use Kal V'Chomer logic to extend additional points of stringency from the Shomer Sochar to the Shoel, when the Shomer Sochar is in fact more stringent. Afilu hachi, even so, even with that point in mind, the shoel remains more stringent. Karna de shoel adifa, the obligation to pay the principal amount in the case of the shoel for any form of theft, even armed theft, the shoel would have to pay the principal amount. The shomer sochar is exempt in the case of armed theft. The shoel is obligated, and he has to pay the principal. That fact makes the shoel more stringent than the theoretical possibility or the remote possibility that the shomer sochar would end up paying kefel if he would lie after having sworn. So the shoel remains more chomer, and hence we can make the kal v'chomer we saw above. Another approach to strengthen the kal v'chomer and not weaken it or refute it through the listim mizuyim kefel idea is as follows: listim mizuyim gazlan hu, listim mizuyim armed theft. It's true that the shomer sochar is exempt, but it's not true if you say that listim mizuyim is a form of gazlonus. Gazlon, not ganov. Gazlon is an open theft as opposed to a ganov, which is stealthful theft. If you classify listim mizuyim as gazlon, there is no kefel. So then there's no element of stringency by the shomer sochar over the shoel. So the kal v'chomer remains, and if you ask, how do you know by shoel that there is an obligation for geneva and aveda? The answer is, we derive that through kal v'chomer logic from the case of shomer sochar. Ashkechon lechiyuv. Now, you can see we have a Roman numeral number 2 with a firebox marking. Up till now, and this is, we didn't see the number 1 in today's year, therefore you would have to go back to our previous year, where up till now we were seeking sources for obligation to compensate by the different kinds of shomrim whereas now there's a big turnaround. This is the second stage of our, we'll say, shomrim analysis. And we introduced this in our Mishnah. We saw in the first Mishnah, the opening Mishnah of the Perek, that in the event that the owner is present at the time of the initial borrowing, present meaning he is a part of the service being provided to the borrower, the owner is working for the borrower, either prior to the actual borrowing of the item or along with the borrowing of the item, the Torah says in Psukim Yud Gimel and Yud Dalid, the owner's presence or lack thereof makes a difference. In Pasuk Yud Dalid, it says, "In Bolov Ima Lo Yishalem," if the owner is with the item being borrowed, or with meaning he's in service together with the item being borrowed, or he was in service even beforehand, and then some mishap befalls the item while in the domain of the borrower is exempt. So we want to know, how far do we extend the rules of exemption with regard to the various shomrim? That is a general statement. This Gemara right now picks up with the last point regarding Geneva and Aveda by Shoel. So the Gemara says, Ashkechon l'chiyuv, we have found the source for Geneva and Aveda by the Shoel if the owner is not working for the borrower. The owner is not with his ein bo levimo. Liftor menolon, from where would we know that if the owner is working for the borrower, either prior to the actual borrowing, continuing into the time that the item is being borrowed, or he starts working simultaneous with the borrowing of the item, and then during the borrowing period the item is stolen from the owner or lost, the borrower is exempt. Where do we know that from? Once again, by studying the psukim in the case of the Shoel, you will not see any reference to Geneva and Aveda. Not on the obligatory level, as we just discussed, nor on the exemption level when you're dealing with Balavimo, with the owner with him. So the Gemara continues, V'chitemo nevif mishvuro mesa. Maybe we should learn from the case of Shvuro mesa, where the Pasuk speaks of the Shoel being exempt in the case of breakage or death if the owner is with him, with the item being borrowed. And just like Balavimo is a ptur, is an exemption by Shvura Umesa, let it be a ptur by Geneva Naveda. And I says, but I can't learn like that. Mal Shvura Umesa Shekein Oines. There's more reason to think of exemption by Shvura Mesa because their nature is something of total onus, beyond his control. Not so by the case of Geneva and Aveda. We don't classify Geneva and Aveda as onus. In fact, by the Shomer Zohar, he is exempt from onus, but he has to compensate for Geneva and Aveda. That's not onus. Ela gomar mi Shomer Zohar. The Shoel exemption for Geneva and Aveda when Balavimo is derived from the Shomer Zohar. Now, by saying that, you're assuming that Ba'olavimo is an exemption for the Shomer Zohar by Geneva and Aveda. When you look in the Torah itself, the concept of Ba'olavimo doesn't appear by the Shomer Zohar. So, in order to make this statement that I'm going to derive Shoel from Shomer Zohar, namely the exemption of Ba'olavimo, of owner with him, that needs to be established. That is what the Gemara will be preoccupied with in the next several lines that you see in brackets. However, if we can, for the moment, simply make that assumption that, yeah, sure, there's an exemption of Balavimo by Geneva and Aveda, by the Shomer Zohar, by the paid Bailey, skip the brackets for just a moment, and what does the Gemara say when you pick up afterwards? Shoel mi Shomer Zohar, lo gomar. No, I can't derive Shoel from Shomer Zohar. De'ika lemifrach, you can undo the source or the proof that we had attempted to bring by saying ma v'shomer zohar shekein poter b'shvur omesa. The Shomer Zohar is in a more lenient realm than the Shoel. So if you're trying to derive rules of leniency, I can't derive that for the Shoel from Shomer Zohar. The Shomer Zohar, the paid Bailey, is a more lenient realm to begin with. As we know, the Shomer Zohar is exempt for Shvura Mesa, regardless of the issue of Balavimo. He's always exempt for Shvura Mesa. Toimer v'Shoel shechayim b'Shvura Mesa. Should you be able to say that there's an exemption by the Shoel who, in general, is obligated to compensate for Shvura Mesa, of course, if the owner is not there? So don't suggest to me to derive a point of exemption by Shoel from Shomer Zohar. So then the Gemara, you can see, continues and asks, well, Ella Geneva Vaveda B'Shoel L'Chiyuva Menolan. We'll go on with that. We'll be the beginning of a long answer. We'll pick up that Amir Tzashem again when we get to it. Let's go back over the bracketed section. After having said that the exemption of Balavimo by Shoel, by the borrower, is derived from the Shomer Zohar, the Shomer Zohar Gufei Menolan, the exemption of for Geneva and Aveda, if Balavimo, where do I know that? Point by the Shomer Zohar. Answer? You'll notice we have a number one. There's a second approach that follows later. Gamri chiyuvo de shomer socher mi chiyuvo de shoyel. Well, we learn the obligation of shomer socher from the obligations of shoyel. The obligation they need to compensate by shomer socher is for gineva and aveda. The chiyuv of the shoyel, as is stated in the verses, is by shvura umesa, breakage and death. Ma lahalon bebailin poter, just like by the shoyel, if the owner is present, is part of the borrowing, then the things that the shoyel is otherwise obligated to compensate for, he is exempted. Afkan, so too by the shomer socher bebailin poter. The shomer socher, for the things that he ordinarily is obligated to compensate for, namely gineva aveda, if the owner is present, is in service of that paid bailey, the paid bailey will be exempt for gineva and aveda. So if you were asking a moment ago, shomer socher, how do I know he is exempt for gineva and aveda bebailin, I derive it from the way we approach the shoel. Femai gomar. This exemption of shomer socher from as being derived from shoel, what we'll call scriptural mechanism or hermeneutic mechanism, the different approaches to dealing with scriptural topics, how, which one, which method did you use? Ma'amotzinu is in effect an attempt to compare topics. Simply by comparing topics, I compare the rules of Shomer Socher to the rules of Shoyel. But if that's the method you're using, as opposed to a Mosaic tradition, this is simply an application of logic. Well, Iko lemifrach kideparchinon shekein oinis. I can still undo that logic by saying that you can't derive the exemption of shomer socher from shoyel, because the realm of shoyel is an exemption concerning a matter of oines, of shvura and mesa. The Torah says for breakage and death, if the owner is there, so the borrower is exempt. Sure, it's easy to understand why he's exempt, because those represent cases of loss of beyond his control. How in the world should I be able to apply that exemption, that type of exemption, to the case of shomer socher concerning matters of geneva and aveda, which are not ones? There's greater responsibility on the part of the shomer in a case like that, where it's not something beyond his control. So how am I to establish by shomer socher an exemption bebailim for geneva naveda? Elo, stage 2. Elo omar kro. The pasuk. This is a scriptural derivation, and when you come to different kinds of scriptural derivations, we don't raise logical exemptions, and it's a function of one letter. Omar kro. The pasuk says v'chi yishal. When you look at pasuk yud gimel is coming on the tail, on the tails of the psukim dealing with the shomer socher, and the letter vav has one of its characteristics is to connect. Vav moisif al inyan rishon. The vav that you find at the very beginning of the borrowing section, as we mentioned, psukim yud gimel and yud dalet deal with the borrower. It's a continuation. It's moisif, literally. It adds. It adds to the parsha of shomer of shoyel that which was mentioned in the Inyan Rishon, the first topic, I mean the previous topic. The Inyan Rishon was the Shomer Socher, V'yulmad Elyon Mitachton. And because the Parshios are attached through that Vav, I have a right to, we'll say, to go backwards as well. And I'll learn Elyon, the rules of Shomer Socher, Mitachton, from the rules of Shoyel. And just like by Shoyel, for its chiyuvim, if the Bailim is present, there is Ptur. So too by Shomer Sochar, for the things that it's obligated for in general, if the Bailim is there, he too will be exempt. So with that in mind, I have established that a Shomer Sochar is Potter B'Bailim, even for Gneva and Aveda. And with that, we were going to say that the Shoyel also, if the Bailim is present, will be exempt for Gneva and Aveda. Vakati, but still, Shoyel mi Shomer Sochar lo gomar. I can't learn Shoyel from Shomer Sochar. De'ika lemifrach, ma l'shomer sochar, shekein poter b'shvura umesa. The Shomer Sochar is still a realm of greater leniency than the realm of Shoyel. In what sense? The Shomer Sochar is exempt even without Bailim in the case of Shvura Mesa. Should I say that there should be exemption b'shoyel, teimer b'shoyel, shechayov b'shvuro mesa? The shoyel without bailim is obligated for shvura umesa. You can see now that we have a long answer marking. We have to answer the question, where do we know that a shoyel is exempt for Geneva and Aveda if it's b'bailim? We continue. Elo Geneva v'Aveda b'Shoyel l'chiyuva menolon. Where do we know in general that a Shoyel is obligated for theft or loss? Once again, in general, meaning without the phenomenon of b'bailim. We, of course, discussed this before. De Gomar Mishoymer Sochar. We learn the obligation for Geneva and Aveda, which in the Torah you do not find by the Shoyel, but we learn it from the Shomer Sochar. So once we say that Shoyel is a derivative of Shomer Sochar regarding Geneva and Aveda, and how, by the way, did we come to that conclusion? We saw earlier that was through a Kal V'Chomer. You can use the arrows to the left-hand side of the Gemara text to see where above the Kal V'Chomer had been introduced. According to the rules of Kal V'Chomer logic, we say as follows, that the derivative cannot be any more extreme than the source. So if the source for obligation in general by Geneva and Aveda for the Shoyel is derived from the Shomer Sochar, Dayo labo min hadin lios kanidon. Dayo means it's enough, not more than, not more extreme, but rather it's enough that which is bo min hadin, that which is derived through din. Din means Kal V'Chomer logic. In this case, the Shoyel as being obligated in Geneva Veda is derived from the Shomer Sochar, Lios Kanidon. So however we view the Shoyel, he shall be no more extreme than Nidon, than the source. Oh. Ma Geneva Vaveda de Shomer Sochar. The Bailim Potter, with regard to the rules of Geneva and Aveda of the Shomer Sochar, who is the Nidon, he's the source of our information, we know that in the case of Bailim, the Shomer Sochar will be exempt. And by the way, that we proved in the bracketed section above, the exemption of Shomer Sochar through the Bailim for Geneva and Aveda. So, and that was proven, by the way, through a hekish, through a vov, the vechi yishal, af geneva v'aveda d'shoyel, nami b'bailim poter. So too, geneva and aveda by the shoyel, the way we view shoyel with regard to the rules of geneva and aveda, we say, if the owner is present, he too, the shoyel, will be exempt. This conclusion, of course, is predicated on the concept of Dayo Labo Min Adin, referred to often briefly by the term Dayo. So the Gemara asks, Ha Nicha Leman De Islay Dayo. This conclusion can be accepted if you accept that rule, that that which is derived is no more extreme than the source. Ela Leman De Leslay Dayo Mai Iko Lemeimar. But he who doesn't hold from that, we'll say that restriction, that cap that we place on Kal v'chomer logic, what are you then going to say? Meaning, if you don't say Dayo, it could be that the derivative, namely the Shoyel, will in fact be more extreme than the Shomer Socher. Though the Shomer Socher by Gneva Naveda is exempt by Lim, maybe the Shoyel will still be obligated to compensate. So where do we know the exemption of a Bailim by the Shoyel for Geneva Naveda? Elo Omar Kro, Vechi Yishal. Now this might sound familiar, we saw that above in the bracketed section, and it is. It's the same Vov, and that Vov Moisif Al Inyan Rishon. It serves to show that the Parsha of Shoyel is an extension of the Parsha preceding it, the Parsha of Shomer Socher. The Yilmad Elyon Mitachton, V'tachton Mi'elyon, and in fact, that Vov works to connect the Parshos in two directions. So I will learn Elyon Mitachton, Elyon is Shomer Socher, from the Shoyel. And what do I derive when I do that? Elyon mitachton. As we saw earlier, the Elyon, the Shomer Socher, is exempt when you have Bebailim for Geneva and Aveda. That which you ordinarily, if you didn't have the Bailim, the Shomer Socher would have been obligated for Geneva and Aveda. But I learn Elyon mitachton, just like the Shoyel is exempt from his chiyuvim when it's bebailim, so too the Shomer Socher is exempt from his chiyuvim when it's bebailim. That's Elyon mitachton. And what's tachton mi elyon? I learn the Shoyel, he's tachton, he's the later section. Tachton literally means underneath. It's the psukim that follow, the later psukim, from Elyon, from the earlier psukim which deal with the Shomer Socher, just like the Shomer Socher is chayav in Geneva Aveda when the owner is not present, so too the Shoyel is obligated to compensate for Geneva Aveda when the owner is not present. And we emphasized already earlier that the rules of Geneva Aveda, the obligation to compensate for Geneva Aveda, is not found explicitly by Shoyel. It had to be derived from the Shomer Socher. And Rashi points out something we had mentioned earlier, that when you have this form of derivation, the Hekish form, Hekish is represented here by that Vov, V'chi Yishal, we don't raise logical objections. We simply compare the sections one with the other. And this is a two-directional comparison, where I derived the exemption of the Bailim for the Shomer Socher from Shoyel, and the obligation of Geneva and Aveda for the Shoyel from Shomer Socher. At this point, you can see we have a slash mark in the Gemara indicating that that which follows is a new trend of thought. We have a topic heading on the side, very brief, Pshia Bebailim. So the term Bebailim, I'm sure everyone is very familiar with at this point, the idea that the owner of the item his presence in service of the shomer results in exemption from that which otherwise would have obligated that particular shomer. What obligations have we seen up till now? We've seen Shvura Umesa, a form of Ones, which obligates a Shoel. We saw Geneva and Aveda, which obligates in general a Shomer Socher, a paid Bailey. And we've said that if the owner is present, those obligations would be exempted from those different Shomrim. There's another obligation, another form of responsibility to compensate that we haven't dwelt on, and that's Pshia. Pshia is an act of negligence, of irresponsibility. That form of obligation, interestingly, is binding or applicable to all of the Shomrim, even the Shomer Chinam, even the unpaid Bailey, who in effect is the one with whom we are most lenient. We mentioned that there were three sections of Psukim within this topic of the Shomrim. The phenomenon of Pshia, of negligence, as being a source of obligation, where do you find it in the Psukim? Interestingly, it's found only by the Shomer Chinam. However, we know that a Shomer Chinam, with whom we are most lenient, is obligated to compensate in the event that he is negligent. By the way, the term Pshia, you can see in the Psukim, Pasuk Ches, which is the last of the Psukim dealing with the Shomer Chinam. Pesha, you find there, a reference to negligence. What is the law if Pshia takes place on the part of the Shomer? However, the Bailim were present. The Bailim were in service of that Shomer. Would the Ptur, the exemption of Bailim, apply to this form of obligation, Pshia? We've seen, now I'm being a little repetitive here, but we've seen the Ptur, the exemption of Bailim, applying to the other forms of obligation, Shvura, Mesa, Geneva, Aveda. Does the exemption go this far to exempt a Shomer that acted through negligence? So that is what the Gemara mentions. Itmar, Pshia Bebailim. Negligence on the part of the Shomer in a case where the owner was in service of that Shomer. Pligi Ba Rav Achav Ravina. These two Amoroyim disagree on this matter. Chadomar Chayav Chadomar Potter. One, we don't have the names as to who says what, but one of them, either Rav Achav Ravina, says he is obligated, that the exemption of Bailim is ineffective in the face of Pshia v'charomar poter, and the other one says it works, it serves as an exemption. We've highlighted with diamonds these opinions, mandam or chayav, and then you see later on a diamond highlighting mandam or poter. So mandam or chayav, the one who says obligated, kosovar, he holds, as far as the psukim are concerned, the exemption of Bebailim that we find all the way later on by the Shoyal, that's two parshios later, two sections later, he holds that the case of Pshia, which is written in the context of the first of the three parshios, he holds Mikra Nidrash Lefanov. The psukim, in this case, will be very specific. The exemption of the Bailim that you find by the Shoel explicitly works, can be extended to the fun of, means one parsha beforehand. That's from Shoel to the Shomer Socher. However, below Lifnei Funov, not Lifnei Funov, that's two sections back. From Shoyel to the Shomer Chinam. That far we don't go. Hilkoch, im bolav imo, that pasuk, that was the pasuk found by the Shoel. It happened to be pasuk Yud Dalet. That can be extended. Let's read that again. Hilchach im bo lavimo, which is written by the Shoyel, which is the third parsha. Ashoymer chinam lo ksiv. It's not viewed as if it's written by the Shoymer chinam, which was the first section. Upshia nami b'shoymer socher b'shoyel lo ksiv. And as far as an explicit reference to pshia by the middle parsha dealing with the Shemer Socher and the Shoyel, it's not written. There's no reference to pshia. Hilchach b'Shemer Socher u'b'Shoyel l'chiyuv, that simple pshia without bailim. How do you know that a Shemer Socher and a Shoyel are obligated in recklessness, that they have to compensate? We just said a second ago that obligation is not written by the Shomer Socher and the Shoyel. How do you know they're obligated? Asya b'kal v'chomer mishomer chinam. That can be derived through kal v'chomer logic from starting from the Shomer Chinam. And the kal v'chomer would be, without getting into details, mind you, the Shomer Chinam, concerning whom we find extensive exemption, and yet when it comes to pshia, he, the Shomer Chinam, is obligated. The Socher and Shoyel, which are more limited in their exemptions, certainly will be obligated to compensate for pshia. Avol bebailim liftor af b'shoymer Socher u'b'shoyel lo. But to exempt the Shomer Socher and Shoyel from pshia in the case of bebailim, that we cannot do. My time off. Why not? Kiksiv im balavimo lo yishalem asheo vashemer socher. The Torah that speaks about balavimo, presence of bailim, being a source of exemption, the Torah writes that explicitly by the Shoyel, and through Hekish we know it's found by the Shomer Socher. Ahanochiyuvi diksivbu behedyahu demichtav. That exemption applies only to the specific obligations that are spelled out by those Shomrim respectively. But the obligation of Pshia, which you don't find by those Shomrim, by Shoyel and Shomer Socher, the exemption of Bailim will simply not apply. These last few lines then were designed to explain why that opinion that says Chayev holds what he does, that Pshia b'Bailim is never going to be exempted. Mandomer Potter Kosovar, the opinion that says that Bebailim works to exempt even in the case of Pshia, Kosovar Mikra Nidrosh Lefonov Ulifnei Fonov. The Pasuk, the exemption of Bailim, which you find by the Sheol, is extended not only one stage back to the Shomer Socher, but even two stages back to the Lifnei Fonov, to the Shomer Chinam. V'chiksiv im bolavimo, and when the Torah writes im bolavimo, which you find by the Shoyel, Pasuk Yudalid, HaShomer Chinam, Namik Siv, it applies also to the Shomer Chinam, namely those things that the Shomer Chinam is obligated for, it's really only Pshia. He can benefit, he can enjoy the exemption of Bolavimo. At this point then we have a Machlokes Amoroyim between Rav Ach and Ravina. Does the Ptur, the exemption of Bolavimo, apply to cases of Pshia? You notice a new marking. We have a house marking, and these represent kushios, questions, amanda, we've indicated on the side. In the margin, kushios amanda omar pshia b'bailim potter. We're going to raise questions on that opinion that says that there is exemption mimekuros elu hamuvoyim b'gemora mashma sheyesh l'chayev. From sources brought in the Gemara that appears that we should hold him responsible for Pshia, even though it's Bebailim. So now we start our first question. Note that this comes from our Mishnah on Daf Tzadi Dalet. Hashoyel Poro, Hashoyel HaPoro V'shoal Boleo Imo. One who borrowed a cow and the owner came along with it in service of the borrower. Hashoyel HaPoro V'sochar Boleo Imo. He borrowed a cow and hired the owner to work for him. Shoal Baleha O Sochron. The shomer either had the owner at the outset volunteering or hired to work for the shomer, the shoel. V'achar kach shoal haporah, and then borrowed the animal itself, umesa, and the animal died, potter, the shoel is exempt. So we see exemptions in the case of Bebailim, V'ilu shomer chinam lo kotani, and yet you don't find the exemption for a shomer chinam. Now, the shomer chinam represents pshia. What do we mean by that? His only chiyuv is for recklessness. We don't find in the Mishnah a reference to a Bebailim exemption for recklessness. Rashi at the bottom says, V'ilu shemechinam deporo lo kotoni, Bebailim, patur, potter, nishum dechiyuvei lese, ela b'shia. The obligation of the shemechinam exists only in the case of pshia. Upshia lo potar bo bebailim. And that obligation is not exempted by bebailim. The Gemara asks, is that your proof that there's no exemption for pshia? Just because shomer chinam is not mentioned? Just because the unpaid bailey isn't mentioned in our Mishnah? L'tameh shomer sochar mi kotoni? According to you, does there exist any exemption for a shomer socher? Is he taught over here? And yet we know that there is exemption of Bebailim for the shomer socher in his respective chiyuvim, namely in Geneva and Aveda. Ela Tana, rather the Tana, meaning our Mishnah, the author of our Mishnah, Milsa Dixiva, we continue at the top of Amud Beis, Dixiva Behedya Katani, that which is spelled out in the Torah is what the Tana was interested in mentioning. The Asya Midrasha Lo Katani, things that are derived through Drasha, the Mishnah doesn't bother mentioning, even though there are other exemptions that are that exist, but they're not explicit. What is explicit? The that which is explicit, namely the Tur Bebailim, is explicit by the Shoyel. Hence, the Mishnah features the rules or the exemption of Bebailim by the Shoyel, but not to serve as a declaration that the exemption of Bebailim doesn't exist in other cases. Toshma. Again, a question on the opinion that says potter. Potter for pshia, Bebailim. Notice we have a long marking. So all of these lines are designed to develop the question. Shoala v'shoa bo'ali imo. One borrowed an animal, and along with that borrowing, the owner came in service of the shoel as well. Sochra v'sochar bo'alei imo. Now, notice we've dashed underlined sochra. He rented the animal. Up till now, I should want to emphasize, based on the source before, we spoke about the borrowing of the item. And we mentioned that that was something that was spelled out in the Torah, and that's what the topic of our Mishnah was, dealing with things that are spelled out, namely borrowing of the item. Here, we have reference to the item being rented. And the concept of bebailim by a rented item, at this point, let us say, isn't explicit. So, and the Gemara is going to make this point and say, here we have a Tanaic source that deals with situations that are asya midrasha, that come through derivations. So let's start the question again. Toshma, shuala v'shual bo'aleo imo. Sochra v'sochar bo'aleo imo. Here he rented the cow and hired the owner along with it. Shoala v'sochar bo'aleo imo. Sochra v'shual bo'aleo imo. Here he rented the animal and the owner came along with it working for, without pay. Af alpi shabaylim oisin melocha b'mokom acher umesa. Even though the owner is doing something in a place other than where the cow is, the borrowed item, and the then umesa, and then the cow dies, potter, the borrower is exempt. Savrua, the Gemara continues with an assumption that we're going to make. Ha money, Rabbi Yehuda hi. This Tanaic source is authored by Rabbi Yehuda, the Omar, who is of the opinion in a matter that's subject to controversy, but who is of the opinion. Socher, kishoymer socher domi. The socher, the renter, is halachically categorized as a paid bailey. The ha hai tana kotani milsa da asya midrasha. Here you have a Tanaic source that doesn't hesitate to deal with points that are derived as opposed to points that are stated explicitly. Namely, you have the source you're dealing with, the exemption of bailim as related to a shomer sochar, as related to a paid bailey. In this case, the paid bailey is represented by the socher, the renter example. That's not the exemption of bebailim is not stated explicitly, as we've spent a good deal of time in today's shir mentioning that socher, that the exemption of bebailim is not stated explicitly other than by the shoel. So here you have a source that goes beyond that which is stated explicitly. Vilu shomer chinam lo katani. And again, there's no reference to an exemption of bebailim by the shomer chinam, by the unpaid bailey, that would have relevance to pshia. So you don't see an exemption for pshia bebailim. Hence our question on the opinion that says there is exemption. The Gemara responds by undoing the assumption that was made. Ha money, this source, Rabbi Meir hi, diomer socher, kishomer chinam domi, v'tana shomer chinam v'adin l'shomer socher. This source is authored by Rabbi Meir. And the reference to the socher, to the renter, according to Rabbi Meir, he categorizes the renter like a shomer chinam. Shomer chinam is associated with pshia. And he, the source, by mentioning the socher, he is in fact talking about the shomer chinam. And the only obligation by a shomer chinam is by pshia. And the source is telling me that if the bailim is there, the bailim will cause exemption for pshia. And v'u'adin l'shomer socher, and the same will apply to the shomer socher, that there is a ptur of bebailim by pshia on the part of the shomer socher. And Rashi adds not only pshia, obviously, but the other things that he would otherwise be obligated for, like shvura, like geneva and aveda. So according to this, we call the aleph approach. Notice we have an aleph two lines above that we wrote in between the lines. The ha money, Rabbi Meir. ascribing the source above to Rebbe Meir. Now, E Boyes Ema, there's another approach to the source above, but at the same time, we're going to maintain that there is a reference to Shomer Chinam here by saying Sochra, the renter is really like a Shomer Chinam. You might be, we'll say, uncomfortable by having established the source in Rebbe Meir's name. You might have preferred to set it up according to Rebbe Yehuda. You can still do that. If you accept Rabba Bar Avua, Ibo Yesemo Kidemachlif Rabba Bar Avua V'toni, as Rabba Bar Avua switches around a Tanaic source that switches around, namely the names with the Shitos as follows. Socher Ketzad Mishalem, the renter, how does he pay? Meaning, what is he compared to by way of the other Shomrim? Rabbi Meir Omer Kishomer Socher, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Kishomer Chinam. Notice we've dashed underline Rabbi Yehuda, he being the opinion that parallels the Socher to a Shomer Chinam. That's according to Rabbo Bar Avua that says it like that. According to the Aleph approach, Socher Kesem Mishalem, you would have had Rabbi Meir saying like a Shomer Chinam. Rabba Bar Avua switches that around. He had a different tradition where Rabbi Yehuda is saying that the Socher is like a Shomer Chinam. So with that approach as well, we're still maintaining that there is an exemption for Bebailim even with regard to Pshia. As you can see, we have a slash mark in the text indicating that that which follows is a new point, a new trend of thought. On the side of the Gemara, we have a topic heading, which reads, Dino Shel Rav Hamluna. You'll see that we've highlighted Rav Hamluna's name. His teaching, Haptur Shel Bebailim, the exemption that the Torah offers for Shomer exemption in the case of owner being present, Mugbal b'tnoim aboyim, is limited to the following conditions. Number one, Shiei abaylim im apora ba'oysa malacha. In contrast to what we saw before, impossible contrast, it's not conclusive, but there was reference to the owner being present b'mokom acher. There means in a different location. Here, Rav Hamnuna, he doesn't deal with location, but he deals with type of work. The owner must be involved with the pora in the same type of work. Shehei, number two, she'imo misha she'lo ad shas shvuro mesa. The other restriction, in order to enjoy the exemption of a bailim, is that the owner must be in service of the Shomer from the beginning, from the time of borrowing until the time of Shvura or Mesa, until the time the animal breaks or dies. Up till now, we might have had the impression that from the Mishnah we saw that the only consideration is that the owner is there at the beginning. Rav Hamnuna says that's not enough. He's got to be involved with the borrower from the beginning till the time of animal's breakage or death. After we present Rav Hamnuna, you'll notice by way of markings, if you scan the page, and of course we always encourage the people studying with Gemara markings to apply the bird's eye approach. Look ahead, see if you notice structural phenomena. You notice triangles that appear in alternating directions. Under our Mivneh heading, we have a triangle featured. We call it a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of a give-and-take, back-and-forth style Gemara. With the point facing up, those triangles introduce kushios al Rav Hamnuna, questions or challenges to Rav Hamnuna's point, and the inverted triangle are responses. Now the Gemara, Alma Rav Hamnuna, li'olam hu chayov, the shomer will be obligated even if the owner is present. Ad shetei poro v'choresh bo. The animal that you borrowed for plowing, you have the owner involved with the plowing as well. Chamor, let's say you borrowed a donkey, which is a beast of burden for moving items. Umechamer acharel, and the owner is pushing the animal from behind, meaning the owner is also involved in that same malocha, in that same activity. That's one restriction that Rav Hamnuna mentions. And number two, v'ad shiubaylim mishas she'lo ad shashvur meso. The owner's presence must be from the very beginning to the very end, till the point that the animal dies or breaks. Almo kosovar balavimo. It turns out then, according to Rav Hamnuna, that the olavimo that the Torah speaks of, and we saw in Shmos Perichov Beis, in Bolavimo, Posuk Yudalit, Akula Milso Mashma, is going on everything, meaning not only at the beginning, but the owner is there also at the end. Mosiv Rava. Well, Rava introduces a challenge to Rav Hamnuna from the Tanaic source. This Tanaic source, by the way, we saw quoted earlier. Shoala v'shoa ba'alel ima. Sochra v'sochra ba'alel ima. Sochra, he rented the animal, v'shoa ba'alel ima. Shoala v'sochra ba'alel ima. Afalpi shabaylim oisin melocha b'mokoim achir. Umeisa, and then the animal dies. Potter, there is exemption. Now, it says here that even if the owner is b'mokom acher, in another place, my love, b'moloch acheres. In referencing another place, it must be that he's involved with some kind of other work other than that which the animal was borrowed for. And even so, there is exemption against Rav Hamnuna. Lo, you notice the inverted triangle, now we respond. B'oiso melocha. The owner, if the borrower is going to gain exemption, he's got to be ba'oisamoch, the same type of activity that the animal was borrowed for. Elo my mokom acher. What then do you mean by in another place? How can that be that if the owner is expected to be involved with the same malacha, the same kind of activity, what do you mean by another place? Answer, the kamarpi va'ozil kamo. Literally, marping means softening the ground. How do you soften the ground? By digging it up, so that you have the owner and the animal both involved with plowing. Plowing also serves to dig up, soften the ground. So in this case, you have the owner treading ahead of the animal with his personal shovel, turning over the soil, with the animal coming up from behind, then plowing. That's an example of mokom acher. He's not literally on the animal. He's ahead of the animal, a few paces ahead. So he's b'mokom acher. He's in a different place at the time that he's tilling the soil. But he's involved with the same kind of malacha, namely plowing. Question: V'ha mi deseifa al gabo have reisha b'malacha acheres. From the fact that in the Seifa you see a reference to the owner being literally upon the animal, it must be then that the Resha, the source we just quoted, is a reference to a different kind of work. And even so, there is exemption. Dikotoni Seifa. Well, let's see. What does it say in the Seifa? Shoal, in the Seifa, meaning the continuation of the source we just saw in the frame, it says in the continuation, Shoalo, he borrowed the animal, v'achakach Shoaboleo, and then he had the workers start working for him. Sochro, he rented the animal, v'achakach Sochar Boleo, and then he hired the owner. Afalpi Shabailim Chorshin Al Gabo, even though the owner is plowing upon the animal, meaning the owner is driving the animal in its plowing, so that the owner is literally on top of the animal, umesa, and the animal dies, chayav. There is obligation. Why? Because the owner wasn't there at the outset. But the Gemara, in raising the question, is suggesting that since the Sefer in expressing its chiddush speaks of the owner being involved with the animal in the same work, and still there is obligation because the owner wasn't there at the beginning, the Reisha, in order to show its chiddush to how far we go in offering exemption, it must be that the owner there was involved with a different kind of work. Let's take a look at the Rashi. There's a few lines up from here across in the Rashi. V'ha'mi d'seifa al gabal mamish. There, as we just read, the owner was literally on top of the animal, the tana la mishum rabusa, and it taught that to show how extreme rabusa means an inclusive point of law, including novel points. Lashmin, and to inform us, de'afilu hachichayav, even though the owner is so involved with the animal, nevertheless, there is no exemption. Reisha mokamacher nami denokat, the example of the reisha of mokamacher, also mishum rabusa, must have been to teach us an extreme point of novelty as well. Ve'afilu achi poter b'maloch acheres, and even so, even though he is involved with a different malacha, that would be an extreme chiddush. Even though the owner is involved with a different malacha, there is still exemption, thereby reinstating our question on Rav Hamnuna. The Gemara responds, Amri, Reisha, v'seifa, v'oisa malacha. The exemption in the Reisha and the obligation in the Seifa are both involving cases of the same malacha as the animal. No question on Rav Hamnuna. V'reisha rabusa kamashmalon, v'seifa rabusa kamashmalon. And still, both the Reisha and the Seifa have rabusa, have points of novelty that are being revealed. Reisha rabusa kamashmalon, the Reisha which spoke of exemption, teaches the afal gav, the lav al gabo, elaboisa malacha, even though the owner is not on upon the animal, but in the same malacha, Kevon de Havu Baile Mishashe Lapoter. Since the owner was there at the beginning, at the time of the borrowing, so there is exemption. The Seifa Rabuso Kamashmalon, the Seifa informs us, the Afagav the Al Gabo, even though the owner is literally upon the animal. Kevon de Lo Hoyu Baile Mishashe Lo, since the owner was not there at the time of the borrowing, Chayov, there is obligation. The shoyel will have to compensate for the death of the animal. The Gemara asks, you notice we have a long question marking. This long question is going to actually result in a refutation of Rav Hamnuna. I just spoiled the story for you, but if you skip to the end of the long question marking, you'll notice at the end of that line it says, Tufta de Rav Hamnuna, Tufta. So then, let's see how we develop the refutation. Hi, my. How can you say, like you just said, that the Reisha and the Seifa are speaking ba'oisa malacha? E amris bishlamo Reisha b'malacha acheres, v'seifa ba'oisa malacha hainu rabusa. If you tell me that the Reisha is describing in its teaching me of exemption, is talking about malocha acheres, unlike Rav Hamnuna, and the Seifa is speaking about the same malocha, and still there is chiyuv, that is what we would call a chiddush. That's telling me something really novel. Elo I amris, reisha v'seifa ba'oisa malocha, but if you're going to say that both the beginning and the end of the source are speaking of owner involved in same malacha, my rabusa, what's the big deal, so to speak? What's the extreme chiddush? What's the point of novelty? Idi v'idi ba'oisa malacha have, both Reisha and Seifa are talking about owner in the same malacha. The Rashi, a few lines up from here, says in Dibur Masla Ba'oisa Malacha, Namely, we said, if you tell me that the Reisha is Malacha Acheres and the Seifa is Ba'is Malacha, Rashi says, Uchid Omar Reisha, and as the Reisha says, the Ka'ozil Marpi Kama, in the Reisha, the owner is going ahead of the animal and tilling the soil. The Seifa Shemanhiga B'Malamir HaBokar Davi Mamish Al Daba, and the Seifa has the owner directing the animal with a certain utensil, where the owner is literally upon it. Idi v'idi ba'oise malocha mamishu mali marpi kamo mali manhiga. What difference does it make then that in the description of the Reisha we say he is tilling the soil, and in the Seifa we say he's leading it from behind? So to restate this last objection, namely, if you say that the Reisha is dealing with a different kind of activity, that represents a real chiddush, a point of novelty, that even so, that the owner is involved with a different activity, since it's bebailim, since they started at the same time, there is exemption. The Seifa also represents a chiddush, insofar as even though the owner is involved with the same kind of work as the animal, there is obligation because the owner didn't start off at the same time as the animal. But if you say that in order to, or I should say like Rav Hanuna, that the Reisha and Seifa is Ba'oisa Malacha, then what need is there to describe different types of Oisa Malacha situations? In the Reisha, you said that it's in the same kind of Malacha, namely plowing, where the owner is walking ahead of the animal and tilling the soil. And the Seifa, the owner is on top of the animal while tilling the soil, while plowing. You don't need to change examples if you're going to tell me that the Reisha and Seifa are both within the same realm, namely Oisa Malacha. You're not gaining anything by teaching me two different examples of essentially the same thing. So if you already have a Reisha and a Seifa, it must be that they are dealing with two extremely different situations. The Reisha dealing with Malacha Acheres, a totally different kind of activity, and yet there is exemption. And the Seifa, owner and animal in the same kind of activity, and yet there's obligation. Well, by saying that, you're showing me unlike Rav Hamnuna, because here we're saying that there exists exemption even in a case of Malacha Acheres. Tanya, and furthermore, we have a Tanaic source which explicitly refutes Rav Hamnuna. Just a word about structure. We're going to have a Tanaic source right now. As you can see, the next four or five lines have a frame around them. Immediately following that, there is another Tanaic source, Vitani Idach, which eventually we will show you that on the two points of Rav Hamnuna, we had numbered them above in the middle of the narrow lines where we highlighted Rav Hamnuna's name. You notice we have a one that said Achte Poroch V'Choresh Bo, meaning the Oisa Malacha Din, and number two, the time frame from beginning to end. In Brisa number one, you will see that we've dashed underline. It says that if the owner of the animal was at the time of borrowing, and ein tzorich lios imoy b'shas shvur mesa. No, he does the owner, in order for the exemption to exist, the owner need not be there at the time of breaking or death. That is, we'll call the time element that Rav Hamnuna spoke about, and the source says to to the contrary of what Rav Hamnuna said. Rav Hamnuna insisted from beginning to end, here not necessary to be at the end. That's in the first source. So the first source will refute the second point of Rav Hamnuna. The second Tanaic source that's forthcoming, notice we have another dash underlining. It says Kevan Shosim Rishus Mashal Shaw Achas Bebailim Umesa Potter. And we will see in the Rashi that this source also refutes Rav Hamnuna. I must retract and offer my apologies for the mistake and that I just made. Let me correct myself. The Rashi points out that on the two points of Rav Hamnuna are refuted by Tanaic sources. The first point of Rav Hamnuna, that owner and animal must be in the same activity, that was refuted by the source above that spoke about Mokom Acher. Even though there was an attempt to say that Mokom Acher didn't really mean another kind of activity, here we've reached the point where it must refer to a different kind of activity. The second point of Rav Hamnuna, by way of the time frame, that is refuted in the Brisa that we're about to see now. There in fact are two Brises, but they are not in conflict with one another. They essentially tell us the same point. Let us now go to the text, the Ode Tanya, and we have another source that will here refute the second point of Rav Hamnuna, concerning the issue of the time. Mimashma shenemar im ba'olav imoy lo yishalem. The Pasuk says, and that was Pasuk Yudalid, that if the owner is with the animal at the time of the borrowing, then there is no payment. Eini yodea, would I not have known, she'im ba'olav ein imo shalem yeshalem, that if the owner is not with the animal and it dies, then the borrower must pay. I would have known that on my own simply by drawing an inference. Elamah Talmud Lomar Ba'olav Ein Imo. So why is there any necessity for the Pasuk to spell out in Pasuk Yud Gimel that which I could have figured out from inference through Pasuk, from Pasuk Yud Dalet? Lomar Loch. By having these two verses, I now conclude the following. Bearing in mind that if you have information that you could have figured out on your own, and yet the Pasuk says it, it must be that the Pasuk is going beyond that which I would have simply inferred on my own, would have been able to infer on my own. So what's the point? It's as follows. Hoya imoy b'shas sheila, if the owner is there at the outset, together with the borrowing of the animal, ein sorach liyos imoy b'shas shvur mesa, then there will still be exemption even if the owner is not there at the time of the animal's breaking or death. However, haya imoy b'shas shvur mesa, if the owner is there at the time of the breaking or death, if you're going to attempt to find exemption, tzorach liyos imo b'shas shela, then the owner would have had to be there at the outset. That source, then, especially where we dashed underline, ein tzorach liyos imo b'shas shvur mesa, that is unlike Rav Hamnuna. We continue with the next source, v'tanyo idoch, mimashma shenemar ba'olav ein imo shalem yishalem. This was, as we saw, pasuk yud gimel. It says if the owner is not there, then the borrower must pay for the animal's death. Eini yodea, would I not have known, she'im bolav imo lo yishalem, that if the owner is there,
then there would be exemption. I could have figured that out from simply inferring information from Pasuk Yud Gimel. Elo ma tamad lomar, then what is the point of stating explicitly the words im bal of imo that you find in Pasuk Yud Dalet? Lo mar loch, it informs us, kevan shiyotza mirshus mashio, shaw achas bibailim, umesa potter. If the animal left the owner's domain, I say domain, it's property, but the owner went with the animal, even for a moment, he was there at the outset, working for the borrower, and then the animal dies, even though at the point that the animal dies, the owner is not there, potter, there is exemption. That too is a challenge to Rav Hamnuna's second point. Tiufta de Rav Hamnuna, tiufta. So with these sources having been stated, we refute Rav Hamnuna. The next section of Gemara, from here till the concluding point of today's shiur, will involve Abaye and Rava analyzing the psukim that we just made reference to, psukim Yud Gimel and Yud Dalet, through the eyes of Tanoim that we saw on Daf Tzadi Dalet, Rav Yoshia and Rav Yonason. It's most advisable for anyone who is continuing with our shiur today to be very familiar with the machloikis Rav Yoshia and Rav Yonason that we saw back on Daf Tzadi Dalet, where Rav Yoshia, in viewing psukim, say that if you have several items, unless you have several items in a pasuk, several points in a pasuk, unless you have an expression that splits them into separate elements, we will assume togetherness. Rav Yonason, on the other hand, says, even in the event that you have several items mentioned in a pasuk, we will assume separateness unless you have a word that joins them together. What we just said is a very general presentation of those two opinions, and there you saw more specific examples. You saw the case, the source in which Rav Yonason and Rav Yoshia appeared, dealing with the sin of cursing parents, father and mother, where we know that there is violation, there's a transgression of that, even if one curses one of the parents, even though the simple, superficial reading of the pasuk states that one is considered sinful when he curses avi v'imo, his mother and father. How do we know that there is a sin in cursing even one parent? That was the issue that Rav Yoshia and Rav Yonason had discussed. With that very general background, we continue in our Gemara. Abaye sovar lo k'Rav Yoshia, mitaretz l'kroi k'Rav Yoshia. Abaye holds, like Rav Yoshia, that even without a joining word, we will assume togetherness. He will explain the psukim over here dealing with bailav imo, where you have also a phenomenon of two elements. You have the beginning time, that's one element, shas shela, and you have another element, shas shvura mesa, the end time. And the issue is that which we just got finished discussing, presence of owner in order to gain exemption. Is it only if he's there at both times, or is it sufficient that he's there at the beginning time alone? So Abaye will, I should say that Abaye and Rava all come to the same conclusion, that it's sufficient that the owner is there at the beginning time alone, but how do you reach that conclusion? So Abaye, he accepts the Rav Yoshia approach to the psukim, and will explain the psukim in the, we'll call him the Rav Yoshia spirit. Rava Savar Law Kirab Yonasan Umetaretz the Kroik. Rabbi Yonasan, Rava takes the Rabbi Yonasan approach, which means that even if you have several points, you will assume separateness, so that even though the psukim might indicate from the owner's presence in order to gain the exemption of Bebailim, the presence at beginning and end, not necessarily so, says Rabbi Yonasan. I assume, even though both time frames are alluded to in the psukim, in order to gain exemptions enough, if he's there for one, and he'll explain, Rava will explain the psukim in the spirit of Rav Yonasan's approach. And now the Gemara goes over those points in detail. We have a double underline introducing Abaye's approach, and at the top line of Tzadi Vav Amud Aleph, the same type of marking where Rava introduces his approach. You'll notice Rashi, the second to last narrow line, Abaye Sovar Law Vechule, Hashta Mehader Lefrushi, Mehecho Yalfi Hani Tanoi. At this point, the Gemara will go back and reveal from where do the above Tanoim know. That it's necessary in order to gain exemption, it's necessary to be for the owner to be there at the time of initial borrowing, and it's not necessary for him to be there at the time of death or breakage. So as we said, Abaye will show that information through the psukim, the way Rav Yoshia would have approached things, and Rava will do the same. Again, it's the same conclusion, but through a different method. Now let's get into the Gemara. Abaye, the first double underline, note also that this is a long marking, taking you to the bottom line of the Gemara. Abaye, Sovar lo k'Rav Yoshu, Mitaretz l'kroi k'Rav Yoshua. The Pasuk says, Ba'ol avei nimo shalem yishalem. The owner is not there. This we saw in Pasuk Yud Gimel. The owner is not there. We say he's not there. When is he not there? Taimo dolese betravayu. Again, Rav Yoshe says, assume togetherness. The owner is not there in both times, namely Shas Shela and Shas Shvu. He's not there at all. Now, you could infer from that, Ha ise bechado velese bechado poter. The inference that you would draw from that is, you notice we've highlighted the diuk, the inference with a diamond. The inference you would draw from Pasuk Yud Gimel is that if the owner is there at one of the two time frames and not there at the other, there would be exemption. Uksiv. And then you proceed to Pasuk Yud Dalid, and what does it say? Im bol avimo lo yishalem. If the owner is there, then there's exemption. He is there when? Well, what's the Rabbi Yoshi approach? Assume things together. Taimodise betravayu. The pasuk would lead you to say the exemption exists only if he is there in both time frames, leaving you to infer ha ise bechada valese bechada mechayev. If he's there at one and not at the other, there would be guilt. There would be obligation on the part of the shoyl to compensate. How do you resolve these two inferences? The first inference, the first diamond, indicated that if he's there at one of the time periods, there would be exemption. The second diamond inference indicated that if he's there at only one of the time periods, there would be guilt. Lo marloch. It tells us as follows. Hoyo imo b'shash shela. If he's there at the one time period of borrowing, at the initial borrowing, eno tzorach liosimo b'shash shvura mesa. In order to benefit from the exemption of the Bailim, the owner need not be there at the end time, at the time of breaking or death. However, so that number one is the first diamond inference leads me to conclude that if the one time period happens to be the beginning time period, then there is exemption. Now, number two, Hoyerimo b'shashvura mesa. If he's there at that one time period, there will not be exemption. There will be guilt. And that's what the second diamond indicated. If he is there, if the owner is there at the time of breaking, and you want to gain exemption, then tzorach lios imo b'sha'as sheila. The owner would have to have been there from the beginning. But if he's not there, he's there only at that one time period, the second time period, namely the owner entered the, we'll say, the work arrangement later, after the initial borrowing of the item, and he wasn't there at the beginning, that one time period connection between owner and animal is not sufficient, and there will be chiyuv. Let's continue now with Rava's approach. We continue at the top of Daf Tzadi Vav Amud Aleph. Rava Savar Lo K'Rab Yonason U'Metaretz L'Kroy K'Rab Yonason. Again, note the long marking. Rava's approach to the verses is like the approach taken by Rab Yonason, which, as we said earlier, even though several points, two or more points, are stated together, you assume separateness. And with that approach, Rava will explain the psukim through the eyes of Rabbi Yonason as follows. The pasuk says, "Im balav imo lo yishalem." That we saw in that was pasuk Yud Dalid. There's a discussion in Rashi as to why he cites the second pasuk first, Yud Dalid, and then pasuk Yud Gimel, whereas Abaye presented first pasuk Yud Gimel and then pasuk Yud Dalid. That's not something that should bother us. It's not a point of concern. It's just a technicality. So it says in pasuk Yud Dalid that if the owner is there, so then there is exemption. Lo yishalem. Mashma. Now, when you say if the owner is there, well, when is he there? So he's there. It could be beginning and end, or at one of the time periods. And what's Rabbi Yonason's approach? One time period. If the owner is there, no payment. Well, mashma diise betravayu, mashma nami diise bechado, velese bechado poter. That could imply he's there at both time periods, and it could imply even if he's there at one time period, there will be exemption. Uksiv, and it says in Posuk Yud Gimel, Bolav Eini Moshalem Yishalem. The owner is not there. When is he not there? Well, Mashma Belese Betravayu, he's not there at all in both time periods. It's also mashma, each one by itself. Now you have a seeming, what would appear to be a contradiction. According to the information revealed in Pasuk Yud Dalid, you get the feeling that either way there will be exemption. And the information revealed by Pasuk Yud Gimel would seem that either way there will be guilt. Lo marloch. So the resolution is as follows. Haya imoi b'shas sheila, ein tzorach lios imo b'shas vuro mesa. The same conclusion as we had before. We mentioned that there's no argument here in terms of halachic results, just how do you get to it. So here too, if the owner is present at the beginning, there will be exemption. There's no necessity for the owner to continue being there in order to gain exemption to be there at the end as well. However, if he's there at that one time period, namely the end time, he wasn't there at the outset, then in order to gain exemption, he would have to be there at the initial time. Otherwise, if he's there only at the end, there will be guilt, need for compensation on the part of the borrower. Up till now, then, it's been assumed, it's been stated in no uncertain terms, that if you have to choose, let's say, one of the time periods for the owner to be there in order to generate exemption, that it's at the first time period. He has to be there at the beginning of the borrowing of the animal. The Gemara says, Epo Chano, why not switch that around and say, true, one time period is sufficient in order to generate exemption, but it, wouldn't it be enough if the owner is there at the time of Shvura and not there at the time of initial borrowing? Why don't we say that? The Gemara answers, and you'll see in the next few lines there's a give and take on this point. Mistabra she'elo adifa, it's most likely that the she'elo, the initial time presence, is adifa, is greater, it's a greater, has greater power in generating exemption. Mishum de komaisi lo lirshusei, it's at that point that the animal enters the domain of the borrower. So we place a premium on that time. That's where he enters the realm of the borrower. Adarabba, to the contrary, Shvura umesa adifa, we should put a premium on Shvura umesa, that time period, as a source of generating exemption. Shekein chayav ba'insim, it's because of the breakage or death, it's at that time that if the owner was not there, there would have been obligation. That's the time of onsen, of the mishap beyond his control, that nevertheless he would be obligated for. And since the Shur Mesa generates the payment, that's the time period we would put a premium on to create exemption if the owner is there. The more response, Elo She'ela, if not for the initial borrowing, so Shvura Mesa Mai Ovid. So what effect would breakage or death have if there wasn't an initial borrowing? Well, we respond to that, V'ilav Shvura Mesa, if there wasn't breakage or death, She'ela Mai Ovid, so what difference does it make that he borrowed? There's no payment if it didn't break or die. Afilu Hachi, still, we're going to put a premium on the beginning time period, She'ela Adifa. The premium is placed on the initial borrowing, Shekein Chayav B'mezunos. At that point, the borrower is obligated to sustain, to feed the animal. Ravashi Omar. Ravashi's approach is that from the Pasuk itself, that speaks in terms of the din of Bebailim, you can see that it's the time of borrowing that the verse itself emphasizes. What does it say? V'chi yishalish meimreu. That was Pasuk Yud Gimel. It says, and when a man borrows from his friend, he's borrowing from his friend. Now, this Pasuk Yud Gimel, by the way, was a Pasuk that went on to say that the borrower must pay in the event of death or breakage. The Pasuk says there will be payment when you borrow from your friend without the friend himself, without the owner going along with the animal. Oh, that's v'lorei imon. Shalem, shalem. Then payment is made. You would infer, ha reyeu imo pater. But if the borrowing was not just from your friend, but with your friend, namely the owner, you borrow the animal with its owner, there would be exemption. So what do you see? You see that the whole thrust of the Pasuk in offering exemption is at that borrowing point of time, the initial time period. Well, that having been said, e hachi, if you could derive all your information from Pasuk Yud Gimel and from the from the words Me'im Re'ehu, there will be guilt when you borrow from your friend and not your friend as well. So Ba'olav Einimo, V'im Ba'olav Imo, Lomali, what do I need the Pasuk to spell out those words? Owner not with him, that's what you see in Pasuk Yud Gimel, there is guilt. In Pasuk Yud Dalet it said if the owner is with him there is exemption. You don't need to spell all that out when it could have been derived from the inference of Me'im Re'ehu. It could have said, the Pasuk could have said, V'chi Yishal Ish Me'im Re'ehu, Shalem Yishalem. What do I need to spell out that Bol of Einimo, then Shalem Yishalem, or there will be no payment in Bol of Imo? The Gemara answers, Ilav Hanoch, if I didn't have those, say, more specific explicit references, Bolov Einimo and Bolov Imo, if I didn't have that, Hava Amino, hi, I would have thought that the expression of Me'im Re'ehu, Urche Dekrohu, it's just the normal way of speech, but it doesn't have, it wouldn't serve as the basis of making inferences. Simply, Urche Dekro, the normal way of speech is to say, when you borrow something from your friend, without any connotation of, from your friend, but not your friend along with it. But because the Pasuk said, Ba'ol of Imo, Ba'ol of Einimo, I'm able to go back to the phrase, Me'im Re'eu, and draw that inference. And of course, we needed that to establish the time period, as far as Ravashi is concerned, for which the Torah will exempt Bebailim, namely the initial borrowing point of time. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.